The UFO Israel connection confirmed. We are no longer in the realm of speculation. We can actually say that this is confirmed. You may not know what I'm talking about yet, but you will soon, and it is very exciting. It's certainly something that blew my mind, and it shows that things that happened in Israel's history, things, biblical things that happened even thousands of years ago, still have relevance today. Because sometimes the events in history are cyclical. Time itself is not cyclical. Time itself is linear. But sometimes events in human history can be cyclical. And we're going to look at one of those today. Introduction. Okay, so this presentation is a brief rundown of a book Derek Gilbert and I wrote. He was the one that spoke right before dinner. I'm sure you haven't forgotten already. But we wrote a book together called The Day the Earth Stands Still, Unmasking the Old Gods Behind ETs, UFOs, and the Official Disclosure Movement. And you can check out Skywatch TV and Into the Multiverse for more information on that book. So in 2017, that was the first time that I gave any presentation on this book. And I specifically focused on the last chapter of the book, which seems like an odd place to start on a brand new book that nobody knows anything about. And I wanted to make sure to show, to document exactly the dates and the year, because it's important. But this presentation you're going to see today is not a repeat of the 2017 presentation. It's an updated presentation that I first gave in 2017, prior to the events that confirmed the UFO-Israel connection. The first annual Blessed Hope Prophecy Forum, it was October 13th through the 15th, 2017. And you can even see down there, if you can't see it, I'll read it to you. It'll give you the exact time. 10:15 a.m. to 11:15 a.m. in the University Ballroom, exact location. So, and the title of that one was just the UFO-Israel connection of 2017-2018. So, first I want to lay the groundwork for this strange connection between historical events in Israel's history and historical events in ufology. Really weird. You wouldn't think those two would be connected. If it really was aliens from another planet, it would not be connected with events in Israel, because what would the aliens care anything about Israel as opposed to any other country? But if it's something spiritual happening, then it makes all the sense in the world why they would be connected. And the Bible explains that. Isn't it weird that UFOs could be an evangelistic tool if you understand the connections between, not that they're a good thing, they're a demonic thing, but if you understand the connection between UFOs and God's holy land, oh my, it could really open up some eyes. So let's try to do that today. So in the original presentation, I stated that there seems to be something strange looming between the years 2017, 2018, and possibly in the years following. And now, since we're past that point, we can look back at the background of what actually happened. And I do want to say, none of this was me, by the way. If there is a pattern, and if God is doing something here, then all the glory has to go to Jesus. So, like, there's never going to be any reality where I'm going to tell you that it's a prophecy and I'm a prophet. It has nothing really to do with me at all. And I wasn't even the first to discover this apparent connection. So we will give proper credit where credit is due. Jesus comes first. Amen? All right. And so one piece of this puzzle came while I was reading an extraordinary book called What Dwells Beyond, the Bible Believer's Handbook to Understanding Life in the Universe by an amazingly talented biblical researcher named Jeffrey Martis. And a little bit of a Skywatch TV Defender trivia for you. Jeffrey Martis is the one that designs all of our book covers. Those amazingly stunning book covers. It's this guy. So he's got two talents. He's got one up on me. Now, what is shown in his book, he shows that significant events in Israel's history seem to correspond to events reigniting the idea of alien life elsewhere in the universe. And he goes back in the ancient past to show that. What is the biggest thing that would reignite in the minds of the masses today that what if there's life on other worlds? Obviously, a UFO sighting. So the enemy keeps playing this trick over and over and over again. That's why it's mostly UFOs. Though that is bleeding a little bit into this question of official disclosure from the government. We're seeing more of that. So, for example, in the ancient past, you look at 600 BC approximately, Nebuchadnezzar burned Jerusalem to the ground, and at that same time, a curious belief sprouted up called cosmic pluralism. That's when this began. Now, cosmic pluralism, it's kind of a fancy term that's used to describe the existence of more than one planet. usually hundreds or millions of planets populated with intelligent life. So it begins here. 600 BC, Jerusalem burned to the ground, cosmic pluralism. Now in 70 AD, Rome burned Jerusalem to the ground, and in that same year, the famous philosopher Plutarch wrote in his French phrase, we'll just translate, on the face of the moon, because I don't know how to say that. He wrote, the men on the moon, if they do exist, are slight of body and capable of being nourished. Now, why that's important is he's talking about biology here. You know, this was at a time when people were still thinking spiritual things, you know, the fallen gods, all these sorts of things. But he's saying that if there are men on the moon, they're small, they're slight of body, which what does that sound like? Many people report the same thing with these gray aliens, but are capable of being nourished. So there's something biological. That was the first time that it kind of clicked over from something spiritual to something biological. So that was a very important day, a very important time for both things. Now, what makes that specific quote also so important is that Plutarch was the last major philosopher to seriously comment on cosmic pluralism before it was revived again in the Middle Ages. So you see these big, in the past, you see these big spans of time, but we're going to see in a moment that in our modern day, the spans of time are getting shorter and shorter and shorter. Almost like a woman in travail, maybe. Now, modern ufology and the rise of aliens in the public mind began in our modern day, in 1947, with the UFO crash of Roswell, New Mexico, the supposed UFO crash. And 1 year later, in 1948, Israel became a nation again. Very big defining points in both of these. You know, when you think Israel, bam, 1948, that's immediately what comes to our mind. When you think UFOs, again, bam, 1947, Roswell. That those are the biggest turning points in our modern era of these two seemingly unrelated subjects. Now, as Martis admits in his book, this could all be coincidence. Very well could be. It still could be. Jeffrey Martis nor I would ever want to claim a connection exists if there's none to be seen. However, it does seem odd. These two subjects in history, noteworthy events in Israel's history and cosmic plurality, seem to correspond. So I like science a lot. I really like the scientific method. You know, if you want to tell if something is true in a material sense and in a physical sense, then you put it through the scientific method. If you see a pattern, you see how it plays out in the future. So we can look at stronger connections today, so I can kind of lead you on my path of thinking. When we entered into the beginning of 2017, we were reminded of a major event in Israel's history. 100 years prior, in 1917, the Balfour Declaration was written. For those who aren't familiar, the Balfour Declaration was a letter dated November 2nd, 1917, from Arthur James Balfour, the United Kingdom's Foreign Secretary, to Walter Rothschild, the leader of the British Jewish community, for transmission to the Zionist Federation of Great Britain and Ireland. Now, strangely enough, less than 1 month earlier, October 13th, so that's like 2-3 weeks earlier, during that same year was the famous, or infamous really, Fatima UFO sighting. And that's there's a whole bunch of research into that. It's very prominent in ufology, a very big piece of history. Also in 1917, during World War I, there were numerous reports of UFOs for soldiers on all battlefronts. Now this I didn't know prior to researching, but it was even reported that the German pilot, who's known as the Red Baron, he believed that he shot down a UFO over Belgium in the spring of 1917. Who knows if it was true, but he thought it was. He thought that it was enough to comment openly on it. So the Balfour Declaration was actually not the first step in efforts towards establishing a home for the Jewish people. In 1897, which would have been 120 years ago from 2017, the first Zionist Congress was held in Basel, Switzerland, by Theodor Herzl, the founder of the modern Zionist movement, and the Basel Declaration was submitted. It was stated, apparently the text had justified, but it was stated, Zionism seeks to establish a home for the Jewish people in Palestine secured under public law. Now, this new program, which came to be known as the Basel Program, was adopted under these following terms. So this actually comes from the program. I did have it italicized first, but it was too hard to read, so I just did this. It says, Zionism aims at establishing for the Jewish people a publicly and legally assured home in Palestine for the attainment of this purpose, the Congress considers the following means serviceable. One, the promotion of the settlement of Jewish agriculturists, artisans, and tradesmen in Palestine. Two, the federation of all Jews into local or general groups according to the laws of the various countries. Three, the strengthening of the Jewish feeling and consciousness. Four, preparatory steps for the attainment of those governmental grants which are necessary to the achievement of the Zionist purpose. So obviously a very, very big deal in Israel's history. Now during the same year, 1897, occurred possibly the most famous UFO incident prior to Roswell. The Aurora UFO incident reportedly happened on April 17, 1897. This was a very big deal. It's still covered in documentaries today because it's so strange. The basic rundown of the story, locals claim that a UFO crashed on a farm near Aurora, Texas, and it's claimed to have resulted in the death of the alien craft's pilot. And the story even goes that the townsfolk, they didn't know what this was. They didn't know anything about science fiction or UFOs or anything like this. It was a long time ago before all this stuff was developed. They didn't know what the pilot was. So they took the body and supposedly they buried it in a local cemetery. But of course, the location of which has been lost. So, you know, who knows that it's true, but whether it's true or not, ufologists, UFO believers, true believers, they believe that that's true. It was a major turning point in UFO history. Now, a bit more recently, 1997, Benjamin Begin became the Prime Minister of Israel, and in 1978, he signed the Camp David Peace Accords with Egyptian President Anwar Sadat, and this was facilitated by Jimmy Carter. Now, the Camp David Peace Accords, it's rich with history. There's a lot. There would be a lot to get into that would take too long for what it did to and for Israel, Egypt, America, other nations. But again, this was another turning point in Israel's history. But at that same time, 1977 and 1978, they were also important years in modern ufology. The government of Brazil, this was really a really strange event that happened. It was really unique. But they have released declassified security files pertaining to Operation Saucer, which was a top secret investigation by the, not going to know how to pronounce it, so I won't try, into the 1977 UFO flap in the northern state of Pará. Now, beginning in October of 77 and lasting through the first half of 78, the city Colares of the Brazilian state of Pará underwent extreme UFO and alien activity, even to the point of being called a UFO invasion by their newspaper, O Liberal. And it's now known as the Colares UFO flap. Again, whole thing could be a hoax, very well could be, but it doesn't matter because in the UFO community, this happened and it's a major turning point in how they interpret these events, you know, in what they believe, that aliens are our saviors and they're coming back to save us someday. So whether this actually happened or not, whether it was sensationalized, I'm sure it was sensationalized, many of these things are. But UFO believers believe in this stuff enough that they will alter their view of UFOs based on things like this. So to recap, because I'm throwing a lot of information at you all at once, but we can recap. The first attempt to make Israel a home for the Jewish people occurred 120 years ago. And again, this would have been from 2017, which is the same time as the Aurora UFO incident. 100 years ago, the Balfour Declaration was submitted, which was the same year as the Fatima sighting, and also the Red Baron believed he shot down a UFO. 70 years ago, 1947, we had the UFO crash at Roswell, and in 1948, we had Israel becoming a nation again. There's more. We could add to all of this. 50 years ago, from 2017, was a six-day war, or third era of the Israeli war, of 1967, in which Israel defended against invading armies of surrounding nations. Obviously a very big turning point once again in Israel's history. But what else happened? At that same time was the most intensive and long-lasting UFO sighting wave of all time. It just wasn't one sighting. It was an entire wave of all time, according to NICAP, which is the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. So another very big deal. Taking all this into account, the years 2017 and 2018 seem to have a lot of significant anniversaries of both Israel and UFO history converging. You have the 120th year anniversary of both, 100th, 70th, 50th, and there's even more than that. 40th, that was another one. Now, what might this mean? Is there any biblical significance to these numbers? Do they represent some sort of time or event cycle? That was my question. And if there wasn't anything, then it would be easy to show that because it wouldn't be there. But it turns out it is. So a strange thing comes up when we consider those numbers, those sets of time, times in a, through a biblical context. So in the words of Jesus Christ, Matthew 24:32-34, he says, "Now learn the parable of the fig tree. When his branch is yet tender and putteth forth leaves, ye know the summer is nigh. So likewise ye, when ye shall see all these things, know that it is near, even at the doors. Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled." I need to stop right now just to assure everybody we are not talking about the rapture. I'm not giving you a date of the rapture. All right? So we are not going there. I don't believe in that. I do believe in the rapture, but I don't believe in setting dates for it or trying to figure out times. That's not what we're looking at this verse for. What we're looking for is, what is a generation? What is the fig tree? Because it's commonly associated with Israel. And might that tell us, do we have a clue there on something that might possibly occur? Is there a pattern that is already set? And that's why I'm saying it's not even really a, I guess you could technically call it a prediction, but in a scientific sense, not in the way of like a mystical prediction or anything like that. So just wanted to set everybody's nerves still. We're not getting into rapture stuff. okay, because, and the reason I bring it up, there have been, you know, authors and researchers that will use that same verse to say the rapture is coming in 2018. I'm not one of them. I don't think that's what that's about. So I just want to make sure nobody thought I was going there. Okay. Now, it's widely believed within biblical eschatology, you know, future events, prophecy in the Bible, that the fig tree is a representation of Israel. That's common interpretation. Most people generally agree with that. This also leads us to wonder how long, according to the Bible, is a generation. And there's a few different possibilities. And this is why using that verse to try to pinpoint a rapture date, it's ultimately going to fail. Think about this. Rapture predictions have a 100% fail percentage, you know, attached to them. Everybody, 100% of people who have tried to predict the rapture have been wrong. So I don't want to be in that camp. I don't know about you, but I'm not going to do that. But there's a few different possibilities, and that's why they fail all the time, because a generation isn't just 70 years. You know, they fall back on the 70-year thing because there's one verse that says that. But there's verses that say that a generation is a lot of different. It depends on the context, the situation, and sort of it depends on God's mood at the time. I mean, we see that with the flood and a bunch of things. So we'll look at some of these possibilities and see, not if one of them is more accurate than the other. They're all accurate. But I want to see if there's a pattern here and maybe if they're all accurate in different ways. So first we can look at 120 years. Genesis 6:3, this comes from the KJV. God says, "My spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years." Now, the popular interpretation of that says God was referring to the flood, and he was saying, you know, I'm not going to put up with this stuff forever that the world is doing. I'll deal with it for 120 years, but then I'm sending the flood. And, you know, that gave Noah the time that he needed to build the ark. Some people think that that God is saying he was limiting the average age of man down to 120 years, because before that, they've lived to hundreds and hundreds of years old. When you look at the whole context, though, I don't think that's what's going on. I think he was giving a time limit so Noah would know how much time he's got to build the ark. 120 years seems like a pretty reasonable amount of time. Now, it's believed he was saying, oh, okay, so we just went through all that. It would be then that God would send the flood. All right, so that's 120 years. Let's look at 100 years next. In Genesis 15:13-16, God tells Abram that his descendants will be afflicted for 400 years in a land that is not their own, and that turned out to be Egypt. But then it says, in the fourth generation, they shall return to their own land. So in this, how do we figure out what a generation is here? We have 100, and we know there's four of them, so you just divide them and you get, or we have 400, excuse me, and you divide four generations into 400, and a generation is 100 years in this context. So let's look at 70 years next. Psalm 90:10 states, "The days of our lives are 70 years, and if by reason of strength they are 80 years, yet their boast is only labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off and we fly away. Now, that's what a lot of people that want to be rapture predictors, they'll fall on this. You know, it also says, but if by strength, it could be 80. I mean, shouldn't that tell them 70 or 80? Maybe I should not make this prediction. Apparently not. Some have interpreted this to mean that one candidate for a biblical generation is 70 or possibly even 80. So we have that context there. Next up is 50. Leviticus 25, 8 through 17 tells us about the seven cycles of 7 years, 49 years, and then the Jubilee year, the 50th year in ancient Israel. This was a common thing that cycled through time. So the Jubilee year was basically like a big reset button. The land was not to be sown nor reaped. Slaves and prisoners were freed and debts were forgiven. It was a big reset button. So it was another one of these time cycles. 40 years. There's obviously a lot of significant things we could point to concerning 40 years, but more specifically, consider the words of the Lord in Psalm 95:10. He says, 40 years long I was grieved with this generation and said, it is a people that do err in their heart. They have not known my ways. So that points back, obviously, to the 40-year wandering in the wilderness of Moses and the children of Israel. But we also have Numbers 32:13, which says, and the Lord's anger was kindled against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years until all the generation that had done evil in the sight of the Lord was consumed. So in that context, that's what we're talking about there. Now, let's put this all together and see what we come up with. The weird thing is, with all these numbers and cycles, we can trace every one of them back through Israel's history and see significant simultaneous events concerning UFOs and Israel leading us to the years 2017, 2018, as we looked at before. So just as a quick list and a brief run-through, we looked at all these in Bible verses, and we could just quickly go through them again. So 120 years ago, we have that cycle, 1897, that was Aurora, the first Zionist Congress. 100 years ago, you got Fatima and the Balfour Declaration. 70 years ago, Roswell, UFO crash, Israel becomes a nation. 50 years ago, you have the UFO wave and Israel defends Jerusalem in the Six-Day War. And then 40 years ago, the Claris UFO flap and the Camp David Peace Accords. Notice, too, again, those numbers seem to get smaller and smaller in certain places. I mean, there's only 20 years between 120 and 100. But then you have, 30 and so on and so forth. But in recent times, it seems to be getting shorter and shorter. Now, given the fact that the Hebrew calendar is also slightly different than what we observe here in America, as you know, it's completely different. But pinpointing events down to exact dates or even exact years can prove nearly impossible. That's why I don't do it. I don't really care much for people who think that they can, right down to a day or a year. Unless they're given some actual, real, special revelation by the Holy Spirit, then that's something different. But in the first 2017 presentation that I gave, here's two quotes that I said. The first one was, while we might not know the exact date and year with future things like this, there seems to be evidence to support a significant span of time, such as between the years of 2017 and 2018. I also said, it would seem if history repeats itself, we might see a major event in Israel while, at the same time, see a major event promoting the idea of cosmic plurality. And I went on to expand on that and said, if I had to guess, and that's all it was a guess, but if these cycles keep repeating, I would suspect somewhere between the end of 2017 and the beginning of 2018 that you will see some major UFO sighting. It's either going to be a major UFO sighting or the government's going to release something pertaining to UFOs. And you'll see some major significance with Israel. That I didn't speculate on much because it could just be anything. But I said, whatever, if this pattern holds true, and it might not, God can do whatever he wants, but if this pattern holds true, whatever significant thing happens, it'll be historical. I mean, it'll be something that people in the future will look back on as a major turning point in Israel's history. Now I did speculate a little bit, with the Israel thing, what might it be? And like I said, it could be anything. Could it be a war igniting in the Middle East involving Israel? Could official disclosure event of UFO knowledge from the government, could that occur? Might there be another major UFO sighting or something even bigger? Perhaps it is something that will begin in 2017, 2018 and culminate later, or perhaps nothing will occur at all. The reason I'm putting those up there is because I don't want to I don't want anybody to be confused at what I'm about to show you. This was not a prophecy given to me. This wasn't a special revelation. God didn't speak into my ear. It wasn't anything like that. It's just a matter of following certain cycles, applying the scientific method to it, and seeing what comes out, and then making predictions in the way a scientist would. Now, I'm not trying to strip off the supernatural of anything with Christianity or the church. I just don't want anybody going away from this conference thinking, oh, Josh thinks he's a prophet, because that is not the case. Actually, this stuff to me is more interesting because this means that everybody has access to it. You don't have to be a prophet to figure this out. And I think that this is only one of many of these types of cycles that we could look at and investigate in Scripture. So what happened? Are you ready to see my favorite slide of the whole presentation? Trump! Trump happened! Look at it. Magnificent. Let's just write out the rest of the presentation. But it's actually true. Trump happened. I even put it at the top up there to title the rest of these slides. But now, again, when I first gave this presentation, it was in October of 2017, and I speculated that two events, one involving UFOs, one involving Israel, might occur late 2017, 2018, if the pattern that we looked at earlier held true. December 6th, late 2017, December 6th, President Trump released a statement officially recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and started the process of moving the U.S. Embassy to Israel, Jerusalem from Tel Aviv, on December 6th. Phenomenal. I still get chills about that. And he did it. He actually held up to his promise. It was an unprecedented decision, but obviously the right move to make. Every president before him had an opportunity to do it, and he did, probably out of cowardice. But it made a massive news all over the world. There was a lot of contention about this thing. That event will absolutely be looked back on in the future as a major defining moment in Israel's history. That is huge. Now, just to kind of unpack this, the importance of this event could not be overstated. In 95, Congress adopted the Jerusalem Embassy Act, urging the federal government to relocate the American Embassy to Jerusalem and to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Yet, for over 20 years, every previous American president, Democrats and Republicans both, had exercised the law's waiver, refusing to move the embassy, the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem, or to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Every single one of them made it a campaign promise, but none of them followed through. So presidents issued these waivers under the claim. They said that delaying the recognition of Jerusalem would advance the cause of peace. Really? So basically you bow down to the bullies and you're going to expect peace out of that. Well, the bullies are going to keep coming and they'll want more next time. 2 decades later, there had been no advancement of peace in the Middle East. Things keep getting worse and worse, and many presidents made that into a campaign promise. But President Trump was the only one in 2017 to actually deliver on that promise. And we have the Democrats trying to tell us that he doesn't deliver on promises. Yeah, right. They wish. It did not take long either. Usually government projects like that, they can stretch this across decades. It didn't take long at all. The United States Embassy was officially moved, confirmed, dedicated, and opened on May 14th, 2018. Yeah, where's the unveiling? Yeah. Phenomenal day in history. And it didn't take them long. Now, did anything UFO-related happen? Yes. It'd be weird if I just said, if the screen just said no. I was wrong, sorry. On December 16th, 10 days later, that's all it took, 10 days. Me and Derek's book wasn't even out of print yet. It wasn't even out from the printers yet. It wasn't released yet. 10 days later, an explosive and serious story co-authored by famous UFO researcher Leslie Keen broke on major news outlets, specifically the New York Times and Fox News at first, and then there were some others later, about a secret UFO program. And as it turned out, the Pentagon had been running this program for years in secret to investigate reports of unidentified flying objects. When in history do secret programs ever get the light shed on them? I mean, that doesn't happen. They stay secret forever, and then we just don't know about them. But December 16th, it actually happened. $22 million was spent on the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. It was run by a military intelligence official, Lou Elizondo, on the fifth floor of the Pentagon C-Ring. Now, parts of the program still remain classified, but the parts that have been released are still specific enough. We even know where in the Pentagon this was taking place. We do know that it began in 2007, and it was largely funded at the request of Harry Reid, the Nevada Democrat who was the Senate Majority Leader at the time. Harry Reid has also had a big interest in space phenomena for a very long time. Most of the money went to aerospace research company run by a billionaire entrepreneur, longtime friend of Harry Reid's, Robert Bigelow, who is currently working with NASA to produce expandable craft for humans to use in space. Now, on CBS's 60 Minutes in May, Mr. Bigelow said that he was, quote, absolutely convinced, end quote, that aliens exist and that UFOs have visited Earth. Again, it doesn't matter if he's wrong about that. The fact is he got major airtime on that, and that is going to further spread this question in people's minds. Well, could alien life exist on other planets? Maybe there's not God. Maybe all that Bible stuff, maybe there's nothing real about that. Every time this stuff comes up, that spreads that even further, and it reminds people that that's a question that they should think about. So the program produced documents that described sightings of aircraft that seemed to move at very high velocities with no visible signs of propulsion, or that hovered with no apparent means of lift. Also studied were videos of encounters between unknown objects and American military aircraft, including one released in August of the whitish oval object about the size of a commercial plane chased by two Navy FA-18F fighter jets from the aircraft carrier Nimitz off the coast of San Diego in 2004. Now, again, how often does any of our government agencies that investigate UFOs, for one thing, how often do they ever admit it? You know, they never do. But how often do they actually go out of their way to release footage? Now, we're going to see some of this footage. Now, we've seen this in other governments. Mexico has done it. Russia's getting there, too. They've done certain things towards this official disclosure thing. But America never really has, up until the end of 2017. So we're going to play this video. There is audio, so we'll see if it... Yeah, we'll see if it... That's not the video. Those are umbrellas. Yeah. Not sure what happened.
I just did part.
Okay, no problem. Well, the footage that we're going to look at, this actually comes straight from the American government, straight from the Pentagon, from this secret program, and it was somehow released, and somehow nobody got killed, nobody got in trouble for that. You know, it's just a very weird time that we're living in, where the day before this was released, no one would have guessed. And especially that it's being covered on major news networks, still is today, but at the time that it was released, it was covered, and I mean, I'm going to show you a couple of clips, too, of Tucker Carlson in interviewing Leslie Keen and Lou Elizondo himself. And the strange thing is, he even admits in these clips that he mocked this, you know. For many years, most news anchors have. They've mocked the idea of UFOs. But this time, he was actually taking it seriously and getting frustrated at our government, a major news network. CNN even had Lou Elizondo. That clip is available, but I didn't want to torture you guys. You guys seem nice, so I didn't pick the CNN clip. I picked the Fox News one. All right, let's see if this will... There we go, yes.
Look on the NSA. My gosh. They're all going against the wind. The wind's 120 knots to the west. Look at that thing, dude.
Well, watch how it rotates. Look at this. Right there. It looks so unnatural. And if you couldn't hear, the audio is really hard to hear in this recording, if you couldn't hear, they're basically amazed. I mean, these are guys, they know what aircraft look like. I mean, it's their job. They know how to identify aircraft from like little shadows and lines like that. I don't know how they could do that, but they don't how. And they're blown away by this. When that starts rotating, they're freaked out. They are freaked out. And it looks so unnatural, it's definitely not aerodynamic. So it's really strange. Fox News was one of the first mainstream news outlets to actually take the story seriously, with more networks following later. And they immediately reported on the secret Pentagon program. So Tucker Carlson, one of my personal favorites, he invited the co-author of the original New York Times article, Leslie Keene, not to mock the subject. There's no ounce of mockery in his voice, but to show how serious it is and to actually try to get at the truth. He also invited on Lou Elizondo for the same purpose. So we have those clips. The first one is Leslie Keene, and the next one is Lou Elizondo. But while you're watching these, keep in mind, this is a major news broadcast discussing the topic of UFOs and aliens in a way that would bring concern to any rational person. When has that ever happened in American history? At least modern American history. If it ever gets reported on at all, they laugh about it, the anchors joke about it, isn't that cute, little green men? And then they go on to the real breaking story of the day. The mainstream news outlets covering UFOs in this manner is virtually unheard of in the past, but it's becoming more common today. This set something into place. Okay, so this first one here is Tucker Carlson interviewing Leslie Keene.
Well, you may not have heard about this, since apparently it's not a big news story somehow, but UFOs turn out to be real. We're not kidding.
Everybody
here,
okay?
The New York Times profiled a secret $22 million Pentagon program that investigated unidentified flying objects. Doesn't mean they're from outer space, but they're not identified, and they're flying, and they're objects. The program wasn't bogus. Investigators found multiple aircraft encounters they could not explain, and they've even been storing metal alloy recovered from the vicinity of these encounters. Leslie Keene wrote about this in the New York Times, that piece in question, and she also wrote a book called UFO Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. She spent years investigating UFOs with the support of former Bill Clinton chief of staff, by the way, John Podesta. Leslie Keene joins us tonight. Leslie, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Tucker.
So that piece, I think, vindicated a lot of work that you've been doing for an awfully long time, and certainly got my attention, and I've stopped making fun of people like you and started paying attention. This seems like a huge story. So I know that it's vast and hard to sum up, but if you could just briskly tell us what we think we know about these sightings.
Well, we do know that there are objects in the sky and sometimes in the water that demonstrate extraordinary capabilities that experts say we don't have on this planet. We don't have the capability of creating the kind of technology that, or apparent technology that's been observed by high-level officials for many, many decades. The Pentagon program is the most recent discovery, but these things have been studied in other countries and by our country for many years.
So what percentage of these sightings are we sure are not weather phenomena or experimental aircraft?
Well, that's a really good question, because most sightings of UFOs that just people report are identifiable. I mean, we're talking about maybe 5 to 10% of all the sightings that are called in are not explainable. And what the ones that are really of interest are the ones reported by military pilots, by commercial pilots, by trained observers, multiple witnesses, ones that are caught on radar, events that have a lot of data to support them and involve very, very credible people.
So I guess what bothers me most about this story is how clearly people who should have been following up and paying attention haven't been. And the case that sticks with me, November 7th, I think, 2006, at Chicago O'Hare Airport, 4:15 in the afternoon, gate C-25, I believe, the pilot of the plane waiting to depart to Charlotte looks up and there is a saucer hovering not that far over the plane. People in the tower see it, other pilots see it, dozens of people see it. It's real, and the FAA refuses to investigate. How could that be?
I know, it's shocking. It's absolutely shocking to me. I mean, they refuse to investigate, I think, because who knows what the bigger reason probably is, that they can't explain these things, and they just want, they don't want to deal with them. It might frighten people. They don't have enough information. They don't like to say, well, there's something hovering above an airport, but we don't know what it was. So basically, they will come up with other explanations for it, such as that it was a weather phenomenon. That's what the FAA said about O'Hare, which is really an insult to the pilots who witnessed this thing and many other observers who know that it wasn't weather. I mean, it was a metallic-looking, disc-shaped object that hovered over hovered over a terminal, gate C-17, for about 5 minutes, and then it shot straight up through the clouds. This was an incredible aspect of the thing. It was hovering below a cloud bank. And all of a sudden, it just shot straight up really fast through the cloud bank and cut a hole in it. So there was like a cookie cutter clean hole in the clouds. You could look up and see the blue on the other side. And, you know, as far as anybody knows, as far as I know, and from what I've been told, we don't have machines in the sky that can do things like
but,
that.
But, I mean, this is not a potato field in Maine in the 1950s at 3 in the morning. This is Chicago O'Hare, one of the biggest business airports in the world, in the middle of the day, in front of sober witnesses, including pilots, and the control tower. And the FAA says, we're not that interested? Like, how could that be?
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's very bad. I appreciate how baffled you are, Tucker, because I'm baffled, too. And you can imagine that the witnesses involved with this... You know, it's an insult to them. I mean, there are many witnesses, and we're talking about military people, you know, high-level people in the Air Force, the Navy, the other military commercial pilots who were just told that they were not interested in what they saw. And it's very difficult for a lot of them because they're patriotic people.
Well, yeah, I mean, what if it's the Chinese military? I mean, I believe you because you are, I think, the preeminent researcher on this question, but it beggars belief that the U.S. government would just sort of let it go. Anyway, I appreciate it. Leslie, thank you for coming on. It's an honor to have you.
Thanks a lot, Tucker. I appreciate your interest in this. Thank you.
I have another reason for showing you these clips, too. While watching these, I want you to think about the question, why don't they have Christians on? And I'm not even saying that Fox News is necessarily doing anything nefarious or intelligently evil here. They might not know there are Christian experts. But why don't they have Christians on to talk about this? And we're going to get into that after this next clip. So this next one is Lou Elizondo. We were talking about before. Tucker had him on for an interview as well to talk about this whole thing. Here we go.
UFOs have captivated the public interest for decades, but they've always been dismissed, including by me, as the province of wackos. But that is changing thanks to some remarkable videotape and firsthand accounts from very sober people who are trained to identify aircraft. And that would include this video, which shows two Navy pilots encountering something bizarre off the east coast of the United States. Watch this.
Did you box moving cards?
No, I took an auto card.
Oh, okay.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Wow.
Okay, these are guys who fly for a living, who know what other airplanes look like, including those maintained by foreign governments, and they're totally shocked by this. This is one among many incidents like it, including many that have happened in the middle of the day to sober people, lots of independent witnesses at the same event, commercial pilots, military pilots, O'Hare Airport in the afternoon. None of them have obvious explanations. These are aircraft, apparently, that are moving in ways that appear to violate physics, that are flying very differently from any aircraft ever observed, and way faster than any plane that we know any foreign country has. What is this? Well, we don't know, because for some reason the Defense Department is not interested in finding out. Lou Elizondo is a former Pentagon official. He helped research UFOs. He said the DOD is not taking any of this seriously for some reason. Mr. Elizondo joins us tonight. Lou, good to see you.
Thank you for having me.
So did I overstate that? Is there a growing corpus of evidence, not drunk people on a lonely rural road at 3 in the morning, but sober military pilots saying something that we can't explain is happening?
That is correct. You're talking about individuals who have very high security clearances. They are trained observers. We've actually paid them and put them through schools to be trained and very keen observers to scrutinize what they're seeing. These are individuals who we trust to fly weapons platforms, sometimes with live munitions, over U.S. cities and to fight and win wars on our behalf. And they're reporting to us that they're seeing something that they can't explain. And it's also being backed up by the video evidence and the radar data and other witnesses.
But these must just be weather balloons, right?
Well, weather balloons that are expressing technologies that are far beyond our current understanding of aerodynamics, things that are maneuvering in ways that no aircraft that we are currently aware of has that capability to. Flight performance characteristics that are well beyond the threshold of what we would consider, I think, normal or routine for aircraft.
So they have no flight surfaces, no wings or anything approaching a wing, and there's also no obvious propulsion, so infrared doesn't pick up any jet trail or rocket exhaust coming out of these things.
Right, or a plume. You know, there's many ways to have propulsion. You can do it with a jet engine, for example, right. A propeller or a rocket engine. In this particular case, you have objects that are doing things, maneuvering in ways without any obvious sign of propulsion and defying the natural effects of Earth's gravitational.
At what speeds?
Cool. Some are very, very, very fast.
Faster than our aircraft or non-aircraft?
Absolutely. Hypersonic speeds. And by the way, without any obvious signs or signatures involved. So when an object's moving through the atmosphere, you would expect it to have certain signatures associated with that particular aircraft, whether it's a missile, drone, rocket. So for example, you might see a heat signature coming from it. You might see ionization of the atmosphere.
Right.
You might hear a sonic boom, which you normally would. It's an acoustic signature. In this particular case, these objects don't have any of those signatures.
So we know that they're not U.S. military because they wouldn't be flying near U.S. military aircraft as they so often have. And it seems like we would know if foreign countries had that technology. Look, I have no idea what it is. The bottom line is this is a potential threat, a grave one to our country. What is DOD doing about it?
Well, I can't speak on behalf of DOD right now because I'm no longer employed as a Department of Defense employee, but I can speak to what they were doing about it and what they weren't doing about it when I was part of the program. I think DOD is a very large, complex organization. I think it's very good at what it normally does, but in this particular case, we had a very ill-defined problem set. And so when you're going to the boss and you say, look, boss, we have something here. We don't know what it is. We sure don't know how it works. And by the way, there's nothing we can do about it. That is a very difficult conversation to have in an organization that is, its sole mission is national security,
it's
right?
I think it's terrifying. I mean, this seems potentially like one of the biggest stories of my lifetime. And I don't care if it's about UFOs or whatever you call it. Something that we don't understand is getting very close to our military aircraft, and the government isn't responding adequately. And I hope you keep sounding the alarm on this.
Yeah, I think, if I may, just very quickly.
We've got 10 seconds.
Okay. You go to the metro, you see a sign, see something, say something, and we get an attaboy for reporting it. In this particular case, these pilots who are seeing something and is backed up by other data, it's nothing.
That's terrifying. That's the essence of dysfunction. Lou, thank you for that. I hope you'll come back.
Okay, so again, see how seriously that they're actually taking it. Now, in response to questions from the New York Times, Pentagon officials in December of 2017 acknowledged the existence of the program, which began as part of the Defense Intelligence Agency. If I stand here, are you able to see past me? I just want to make sure I'm not standing in anyone's way. The original cover-up story told to the public was that the program ended back in 2012. So that's what the public thought they knew. Lou Elizondo said the only thing that actually ended was the program's government funding, which dried up in 2012, but the program continued. So Elizondo said in an interview after 2012, he worked with officials from the Navy and the CIA out of his Pentagon office until October of 2017, same month I gave that presentation, had no idea any of this was going on, when he resigned due to excessive secrecy and internal opposition. And he also said that the effort continued and that he actually had a successor whom he declined to name. 2009, Harry Reid decided that the program had made such extraordinary discoveries, again, many of which are still classified, so we don't know what those discoveries are, but that it had made such extraordinary discoveries that he argued for heightened security to protect it, but the request was denied. And a 2009 Pentagon briefing summary of the program prepared by its director at the time asserted that, quote, what was considered science fiction is now science fact, end quote. And that the United States was incapable of defending itself against some of the technologies discovered. It actually said in this thing that the U.S. was incapable of defending itself against not the phenomena, not this strange, mysterious thing, but of the technologies discovered. Very strange wording there. Lou Elizondo, in his resignation letter of October 4th, said there was a need for more serious attention to, quote, the many accounts from the Navy and other services of unusual aerial systems interfering with military weapons platforms and displaying beyond next generation capabilities, end quote. He also said that he and his government colleagues had determined the phenomena they had studied did not seem to originate from any country. Another quote, that fact is not something any government or institution should classify in order to keep secret from the people, end quote. He is now joined, Mr. Puthoff, and another former Defense Department official, Christopher K. Mellon, who was the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence in new commercial venture called To the Stars Academy of Arts and Science, and are currently speaking publicly about their efforts to raise money to research into UFOs. So we'll see where that goes. So here's the conclusion. This pattern between major events in Israel's history and UFOs in our modern day tells us a few things. It does not tell us I got a lucky guess one time a year ago. That's not the point of this this talk. There's a lot more important things at hand here. First, it seems God's trying to warn us of something. I do believe there are biblical cycles and patterns in the Bible that if we look at correctly, if we look at them objectively and then test them out to see if they play out, and if they do, that can tell us something. Second, whatever these things in the sky are, they're tied very closely with Israel. Therefore, they are likely not aliens from another planet. For, like I said before, why would aliens care anything about Israel and Israel's history? Imagine if we discovered, and it's a hypothetical, but imagine if we discovered life on another planet. Would we pick one small country somewhere and just decide, okay, we're going to model our entire behavior around whatever happens there? Sometimes we'll even do it before it happens there. We'll just know somehow, and then sometimes we'll just react to it. You know, I don't think so. It's ridiculous. So it's not aliens. It's not aliens from another planet. It can't be. Now, and third, we should be telling the world that this phenomenon is strong evidence toward the authenticity of the biblical worldview. It's the only one that makes sense with this. And that's why I asked before, why do you think Fox News doesn't invite Christians on? I think it's because they don't know that Christians, some Christians, actually know more about this phenomenon than the supposed experts that the world has to offer. Because we can ask these questions and show them these questions and say, this lends authenticity to the Bible, to God, and to Jesus. Tucker Carlson has even talked about his faith in Christ before on air, so they're not shy about talking about Christianity. If the Bible is true, it explains why these things are tied so closely to Israel. That's a message that can help people. Imagine how much comfort that could bring an abductee if they knew that this was a spiritual thing and there are answers, and they can do something about it. They can get saved and they can exercise and use the name of Jesus to cast these things out and never be bothered again. So all throughout Scripture, Israel is the center location of all of God's major events. When God makes a big move with Israel, especially in the realm of fulfilling prophecy, the enemy retaliates. He does every time. These UFO appearances during major Israel events have to have supposed benefits to the enemy. It's supposed to be T-W-O, not T-O, mistake on my part. First, they distract the world away from what's going on in Israel. I think that's part of it. You get a major event in Israel, and then all of a sudden, declassified stuff that from the government that's never happened before. These UFO tapes are released from the government that's never happened before, and then they're not focused on Israel anymore. At least those who are interested in UFOs, and those are the ones that are going to be more susceptible to this demonic lie that it has nothing to do with spirituality and everything to do with alien saviors from another planet. Second, they offer a resurgence to the idea of cosmic plurality, which, in the context of our modern culture, causes people to look to aliens as saviors instead of God himself. Time is short. The time to act is now, and we must become educated in order to answer the tough questions about UFOs, aliens, and the Bible. If we do that, Fox News will call us. CNN will call us. Even if CNN calls us to mock us, fine. At least somebody is getting some real news for a change. But they will call us. We just got to get busy. We have to show and prove that it's easy to do, that we have better answers than the experts who are looking at this outside of a biblical worldview. We as Christians should be at the forefront of this research so that on a rare occasion mainstream media outlets cover the topic of UFOs. They don't have to bring on Leslie Keene to talk about it. They can bring on a Christian who knows what's really going on and how to explain it to the rest of the world in terms that they can understand. It's not good enough to say because the Bible said so. We need to have answers that the world can understand, and those have been presented here. Now, we have the truth of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on our side, and nothing from this world or hell itself can stop us. That's how powerful we are, not because of us, but because who lives inside us, because of Jesus Christ. And the only thing that can hold you back is yourself. It's the only thing. No one can do it. You can hold yourself back, though, but God's plans are far above our plans. Amen? He's going to get his plans done, with or without you. So the only question is, will you be a part of his plans, or does he need to find someone else? All right. So again, this comes from The Day the Earth Stands Still. You can look it up at Skywatch TV or Into the Multiverse for more information about that if you want to read about that. It's available there. This only scratches the surface. This is one chapter. This is the last chapter, actually, in the book. There's some online information. You can email JPEG at Skywatch TV. Easiest way to get a hold of me. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. You can find me on Facebook, YouTube, various places. Please subscribe. My personal website, joshpeckdisclosure.com. That's a central hub for everything I do. So if you don't remember any of that, just remember joshpeckdisclosure.com. And don't forget to check out Skywatch TV. Thank you, and God bless.
Thank you, Josh. I love this guy. He's
I love you too, Larry.
He's on target. I remember